Hello, my name is Shivani and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really grateful that I have this opportunity to be here in the U.S. and be here to speak. First of all, when I got that email, I was like, yes, I will do it, because what AA has been teaching me is to say yes, when usually I would say no and, you know, have a few other excuses. So I'm just grateful that I said yes to be here and to experience this feeling of, fellowship in this way. So my sobriety date is 19th October 2005, and I have been, trying to find how I can do this. At that time, I went to England to get sober because we don't have AA meetings in the Maldives, and I was finding I was living my life in a way that I thought, was all right, because basically I was able to live overseas for schooling, and I was that sort of typical foreign student that went from coast to country to country, and eventually it wasn't working for me. When I had my first drink, I was at boarding school in England, and I knew at that point that I had taken something which actually made me feel comfortable again, because I was an incredibly, shy person, and I had wanted all these, I had all these things that I didn't know at the time, that it is of being an alcoholic. But I wanted to be the center of attention, and I wanted, it was always what I wanted, and it was never ever enough. And when I picked up the alcohol when I was at boarding school, I said to my brother, forget it. We will stay in this boarding school because there's a bar night every Wednesday and Saturday. And nothing, at that point, nothing else mattered. It was that I could get drunk on Wednesday and Saturday and take up community service so that I can buy alcohol from out of town. I was living my life that way. It was, I came back home for the holidays, and we were not allowed to drink in the Maldives. So I used that as an excuse. It was like one drink or 10, it didn't matter. I chose that to hide and drink, and I judged the people that was there. I said, well, at least I'm drinking outside, and you're hiding this. And I found all these sort of ways to make myself look good and not I was putting on a front. I was just completely just losing it, really. But my alcoholism got to a point where, I woke up feeling very sort of guilty and afraid, and I really didn't know what to do. So when I decided that I have to go to England, I chose to go to England. I could either go to maybe Singapore or something. But at that time, I had my stepmom, and there's five kids in the house, and I said, there's no way I can, hang around and be with kids and all this. So I went to England. I stayed with my brother for a week, and I started going to AA meetings. And the thing is that prior to going to my first AA meeting, I didn't get sober until I went back out again, and I had to research it, more drinking, and to see whether I was really an alcoholic, because I was trying really hard to prove that I can drink normally. So I recognized my behavior, and I was in Maldives when I was still drinking at that time, and I got a call saying that my brother was in ICU, and I was sitting in a resort in the bar with a drink in a coffee cup, and someone called, and he said he was in ICU, and I had to think whether I was going to go and you know, get the call or drink the rest of my wine in. And that kind of thinking, like, who thinks that, you know? Here's my brother sick in hospital, and here's me sort of questioning about it. And so anyway, when I finally went to my meeting, to the first meeting, I heard and I felt really at home. So my drinking and the way I used to be and everything started, it really made sense to me. Like, I knew that my rest of my siblings, I have 11 siblings, and, you know, they can take a drink and leave it, and that's it. But it's not the case for me. And I learned then that, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And when I started going to the meetings in England and went to big book meetings, and I saw that it was something I had to figure out. It was something from inside, and it was not a problem from the outside. That there was, you know, it's not an outside issue. And so I went to meetings, and I started to, you know, I learned how to do certain things that I never ever did growing up. Like talk to people and listen to people, ask them questions, and all those simple things, you know, which A is teaching me how to do, because I was just always so, you know, concerned about, I couldn't see all of you. And AA meetings, you know, helped me to get back into life, you know, to the world, to gave me another chance to live my life, which I would have never known. I was just making geographicals, and my dad used to just go crazy, you know, like not knowing what I wanted to do. And so I got a service position as a tea person, and, you know, it was my first sort of feeling of being responsible, because I had to do that four times. I was there for 3 months, and I did it in the last month. And, you know, I took such it was like an honor, you know, like I have to ask the people for tea, coffee, and make their teas. And so it slowly started to make me get out of, you know, myself. And I really believe in AA, and I believe that what it is doing for me. I opened a restaurant when I was trying to get sober, because I thought if I had a job, it'll be fine. And that was in 2000, about 13 years ago. And that's still going on today, because I am sober. And I attend meetings in Sri Lanka, and because we don't, you know, have the meetings. So I go over there for meetings, which is an hour away from me. But it's just incredible how my life is changing a day at a time. And I know that one of the most important things for me is that I have been able to, things started changing for me when I actually started doing something. So just being sober, just not taking a drink, wasn't going to be enough. So I had to, you know, really understand what the big book was saying, and understand the steps and the traditions. And we've started a meeting in February with a literature meeting, and I truly believe that it's obviously being here, this conference, and seeing everything that's happening here, it's just that it's proof that it works, you know. And sometimes when we're out there in, you know, where there isn't these hundreds of meetings a week and so on, it's easy to forget, like, how do we do this, you know? And the thing is that I know that it works, because it has been working for me, but I have to work it. And just like the way that I used to get things so easily in my life, this is the one thing that I have to work for. Like, it's not going to just come into my lap. I don't know if you know the way it is in Asia. Sometimes things are very easy. You have maids and you have people that do things for you. But here, you know, I have to get there. I have to put my hands up and say, I'll do this. And this is all new for me. But it's becoming, you know, it's becoming sort of natural in a way to, you know, speak to the newcomer and do that. So I really, all I can say is that my drinking days and that time was I knew I was on the wrong way and a wrong path, and I had to, you know, get back. I had to first accept and, you know, admit, which I was not, you know, I was in denial. I heard a guy in Singapore that said, denial is not the name of a river, it's Egypt. And I was like, what? You know? I knew he's talking about this. And I really didn't understand a whole lot of what was going on around me. And so today I'm learning to ask these questions again. I'm learning to say, people in Asia sometimes, you know, we tend to be afraid to say that we don't know how to do certain things. And the first thing is that if I don't know the problem, then I don't know the answer, you know. So I need to be honest about what's happening. And sometimes I come into conflict, you know, with, when I was in England and I came to Sri Lanka, I said to my sponsor, there's no way I'm doing those meetings, you know. People are cross-talking, cell phones are ringing, doors are whatever, and I'm like, this is crazy. And she said, Shivani, why don't you just see what you can offer? See what you can give. And this is your chance. This is your turn. And I just always feel like, you know, just being grateful isn't enough. Obviously, I've got this being here, and I have to go back and do what I need to do. And I'm probably going to be really, you know, annoyed about it as I do, and frustrated. But this is, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and when I stop doing the work, is when I don't grow. So I just want to say that I think I have a couple of minutes. Okay. So I just want to say that my sister, who lives in Vermont now, is the person who found, you know, who first recognized my behavior, and that kind of intervention was important for me because I was completely clueless as to what was going on with me. So today I know that it sometimes feels like this is just the beginning, really, what is going on with what I have to do with carrying the message. But you know, you have carried the message to me, which has made my life today just incredibly beautiful, because now I can look out at the ocean, you know, and the islands, and just feel like actually connected with that, because I'm able to stay sober, and I have to do that just on a daily basis, you know, on a day at a time. So AA has come all the way to the Maldives and where I've been able to get this, and I hope and pray that it will continue to grow and help other people, because this is what, you know, it's what you've done for me, and now I have to do the same. So I'm grateful for all of that, and thanks for letting me share and for being here. Thank you.
Thank you, Shivani. And isn't it amazing that you have to travel for an hour to another country, either by boat or by plane? I'm not sure how she goes. But just think, in a few years' time, we're going to hear about meetings in the Maldives, and we're going to know that we were at the meeting when there was only one member there in that country, and it's developed from her. I think that's wonderful. Thank you, Shivani. Before I go any further, can I just check, is Yumu in the room at all, our speaker from China? If she is, could she make her way to the front here with us? Thank you. Our second speaker is from India. He got sober in 2003, and Raul is going to share his experience, strength and hope with us now.
Hi everyone, my name is Rahul and I'm an alcoholic. Entirely by the grace of God and the help I receive from this wonderful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and your help, my friends, I'm sober today, one day at a time. So I live in India, and I've always lived in India. And my first experience with alcohol was when I was 12 years old. And it happened in our house when my parents were very social people and they had parties and drinks. And a couple of us kids got curious and we said, what are these adults drinking? And let's taste it. So after all the adults had trooped out of the room for their dinner, we'd go and take a drink from the leftover liquor and smoke the cigarette butts. So we were about 8 or 10 kids in the family. So we trooped in there. First time I remember, we all took a sip. Everyone says it's horrible, it's bitter, it tastes like poison, I'll never drink it again. And I said the same thing. I said, ooh, it's horrible, never drink it again. And after about 10 minutes, I go, that wasn't bad. Yeah, it wasn't bad. And I tell others, can we go and take another drink, guys? And everyone says, are you crazy? I'm not drinking that stuff. And I say, okay. And then I quietly sneak in there and take a couple of more. So that's how I found alcohol in my own home. My parents were not alcoholics. They were not. They were just social drinkers. And they socialized a lot. So that's where it all happened. And then I started drinking slyly. I started stealing liquor from my father's bar. I started adding water to the bottles so that he wouldn't know. And I was very clever because I knew that if I diluted beyond a point, he's going to know. So I'd take a little from the whiskey, a little from the rum, a little from the vodka, a little from the wine. Very clever. I was very clever. I'm an engineer, by the way. So that's how it started, and I started stealing liquor, and pretty soon I was using part of my pocket money to buy liquor. My family hadn't noticed anything yet, and then sent me off to a boarding school to study. So obviously the boarding school was very strict, and there was no liquor available. So I had a few years of sobriety because I couldn't drink. And that's how I finished school. And then I came back home, and again the drinking started. And this time, it was with a gap of about 3 or 4 years, and it started with a bang. I was drinking more than when I was 3 years ago, or when I left it 3 or 4 years ago. I was drinking more. And Saturday, Sundays were always drunk. Monday through Fridays, I was going to university, so I had to do that, I had to do this, and I did want to succeed. I thought I was the cleverest guy in the world, and it would be dumb of me to fail. So that kept me going. I did spend 2 years at a university in upstate New York, and that's what kept me going. But Saturday, Sundays, again, I was drunk. But anyhow, I did become an engineer, and I did start working for my father's company. And then things got worse. I got married. I got married to a wonderful girl who I love very much. It was okay before the marriage while we were courting, but after the marriage, all hell broke loose. So my wife started calling me an alcoholic, and I would resent that very much. And I said, no, I am not. And she would insist that you are. And so it went on for a couple of years, but things were very serious now. A lot of fights. And our child was born right about then, our beautiful daughter. And my life was falling apart, really. But I wasn't willing to admit it. And my daughter, when she was 3 years old, began to notice something wrong. And the only way she could cope with it is this little child, when we had friends over, she would go, he's not my father, you know? It's okay, he's not my father. But my child was under tremendous pain. I was hurting her. I was hurting her, and she didn't know how to cope with it. How does a 3-year-old cope with a drunken father? I don't know. It's very painful. I guess. I haven't figured it out. But then my wife knew something has to be done. First thing she did was to send our daughter off to a boarding school. And then She told me that she has a friend whose brother is going to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I said, good for him, you know. Anyways, then things got so bad that one day she said she was leaving me. And she packed her bags and she left me. And this was in December of 2002. In January of 2003, she comes home to pack her remaining things. She said, I've come here just to pack things and that's it. And I was thinking, okay, so where is she going to go? She has to come back. She was living with her sister in California. Her sister lived in California. I was living in India. So I said, she'll have to come back. She can't live with her sister for the rest of her life. That was me. I was very clever, you know, so. And I knew I was always right. The other guys were wrong. And then one day after she had left, the next day in fact, I was quite drunk at 11 o'clock at night, was trying to sleep. Couldn't sleep by then. I was completely blacked out. I couldn't sleep. I mean, I woke up at 4 o'clock and I had to have those two or three drinks to fall back asleep. I was in a completely unmanageable. My life was completely unmanageable. And I noticed that day, the day after she had left, I looked on my bedside table and I noticed there was a black object, completely black, about this big. And I looked at it and I said, what the hell is this? Never saw it before. I feel it. There's nothing written on it. It's just black. So I said, it's a strange book. It was a book, by the way. And this is embossed on the black cover. There's an embossing which says Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's the first time I held a big book in my hands. And many years later, I was wondering how it got there. So how it got there was, my wife had gone completely crazy, living 20 years with me. And when she went to California, her sister took her to see a psychiatrist. And the good doctor, after talking to her for a while, says, look here, lady, you don't need me. I'm going to send you to a bunch of nice people who will help you. And he sent her off to Al-Anon. And that was in Los Altos Hills, California, near San Jose. And I was in India. And I was drinking away, and she was doing Al-Anon meetings in America. Anyways, when she had to come to pack her things, the good people of Al-Anon gave her the big book and said that, why don't you go and put it on the bedside table, your husband's bedside table, but don't talk to him about this. And they were wise, because if she had told me to read this book, I probably would not have. But anyways, this was a wonderful thing beginning to happen in my life when I picked up that book late at night, quite drunk. Embossed was Alcoholics Anonymous. I opened the page, and it says how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. I go, oh, recovered. So what do you recover from? You recover from a disease, a sickness, an illness. Otherwise, what would you recover from? And I said, oh, well, I was too drunk by then, so I went to sleep. Next day morning, I get up and I see this book again. And I said, well, it's still there. And I began to read it. I wanted to get through it quickly. So I skipped the preface and got down to a doctor's opinion. I went to a place in that doctor's opinion where the good doctor says, uses the words, restless, irritable, discontented. And I go, restless, irritable, discontented. Wow, who are these guys? Who wrote this book, man? Because that's me in three words. Restless, irritable, discontented. That's me today, but much less, much manageable. I would be lying if I would say I wasn't restless, irritable, and discontented today. I am, but I can manage it in a better way. I can take help of spiritual things to manage that today. And I can manage in a much better way than I used to. But back then, that impressed me. Restless, irritable, discontented. That's me. I got to read this. So I read Bill's story, and Bill says, alcohol was my master. And I go, yeah, kind of alcohol is my master too, you know, in a way. Can't deny that. And then I called my wife, and I said, thank you for bringing this book. I'm reading it. I didn't tell her I was still drinking, but I'm reading the book. And she goes, yes, they have meetings, and you can go to meetings. She knew more about me because she was going to Al-Anon. And I go, well, how about if I go to meetings? I'd like to go to a meeting. And she goes, after a while, she goes, oh no, don't do that. Everyone will know you are drunk then. And I go, sweetheart, everyone does anyways. So I got on the website of Alcoholics Anonymous, got on the net, AA.org. I googled Alcoholics Anonymous, and it led me to AA.org. And I could read a lot more about what this was. And you know, strangely, my higher power was working in my life, had begun to work in my life. And I was feeling very uncomfortable when I was drinking or getting drunk. I was already feeling very uncomfortable. Something is happening which I shouldn't be doing, something going wrong. My conscience, which I had put to sleep, was awakening. And I sent an email on the contact link of AA.org. Gave my name, said, maybe I'm in trouble, I'm drinking a lot, can you help me? I'm sitting in India, I'm sending an email to, now I know it's New York, I didn't know then. But then Well, I felt pretty silly. I said, well, forget it. You know, nothing much is going to happen. But next day, I got a reply from New York saying that, hello, as of now, we don't know if there are any meetings in your town, but there is a general service office in Mumbai, and you can contact them on this number, and you can contact this person. So I looked at the site properly and I said, oh, this was from GSO, New York. GSO, General Service Office. My, these guys sound like a multinational. General Service Office. And they have one in India too. That means it must be a true multinational. Anyways, I contacted this guy in Mumbai, and he put me through a meeting in another city, which was about 3 hours driving distance from my city. So I go, no way, I'm not driving 3 hours for a meeting. And he told me the date, Sunday, 10:30, at the church in that city is the meeting. He had given me the address of the meeting. Saturday, I'm like, well, tomorrow's Sunday, so maybe I should check it out. maybe I should check it out. You know, something was telling me, you should check it out, you know. I was still drinking and thinking of checking out the meeting. Sunday morning, early 6 o'clock, I start because the meeting was at 10:30, 7 o'clock. The meeting was at 10:30, and the roads aren't that good in India, so it, sometimes 3 hours can become 4 hours. So I start a little early, and I get to the meeting. And when I get to the meeting, a guy comes up, and he hugs me, and he says, "Welcome. Please take a seat." And he gave me a pamphlet. And I said, "That's strange. This guy doesn't even know me." By that time, nobody wanted to hug me. Everyone just ran away from me. So I was also very lonely. And when someone gave me a hug, it just touched me. It just touched me right here. That this guy is hugging me and he's saying, "Welcome." And he said, "Please sit down," and he's given me a pamphlet. And then I started hearing the sharings. "My name is so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic." And I go, "Man, is this guy crazy, calling himself an alcoholic in front of all these people?" And what he said was pretty much my story. Because it's the disease, the outcome is the same. The symptoms are the same. And one after the other, there were about 30, 40 people at that meeting, and I was there for about 2 hours, and I heard all the stories. And then someone read out the first step. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives had become unmanageable. So I said, "Yes, unmanageable, yes. Powerless, probably. That's why I'm here. I cannot control my drinking. That's why my family is completely split apart." It touched me. That's the first time anybody had read out a step to me. And after the meeting, the same guy who hugged me comes up to me and he says, "Keep in touch. The next one is day after tomorrow at this time. And please come." And gave me his cell number and asked for my cell number. So I gave it to him and I headed home. When I reached home, it was about 5:36 in the evening, and I was pining for you know what. And I said, "Look, I need a drink, man. Today is 6 hours of driving, coming back, and I just need a drink." And I was about to go to my hiding place, because by that time I had begun to hide the liquor in all kinds of places because my wife would find it. And my cell phone rings. And this guy who hugged me, he says, "Are you home?" And I says, "Yeah." He says, "Remember, it's one day at a time." And I go, "Oh God, this guy spoiled it. Now it's one day at a time." And he says, "It's today too, you remember, today is also a day." So I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it. I picked up the big book. I read the chapter on be agnostics. And I was thinking about it. And I didn't drink that drink. That was the first night in I don't know how many years that I did not take a drink on my own. It was my wish. It was my choice. Couldn't sleep. My hands were shaking. I ate something. He told me, "Remember, there's something in Alcoholics Anonymous we call HALT. Hunger, anger, loneliness, and tiredness. So eat something." So I ate something. Whole night I was watching television. Didn't sleep a wink. Next day, the guy calls again. And he says, "Remember, tomorrow is the meeting." I said, "Yeah, you told me that." And remember, one day at a time. I said, yeah, you told me that too. So like yesterday, today is a day too. Anyhow, you know what I was feeling? I was feeling there was a power much outside me, much greater than me, much more powerful than me, which was coming into my life. And I was feeling strange. I was feeling my conscience for the first time. My conscience was dead. I had put it to sleep for so many years. And I didn't take a drink that day. So this guy told me, you know what we do? You did a meeting on Sunday, right? So there's one on Tuesday, right? So you don't drink till the next meeting, okay? Then we'll talk about it. Whichever way you put it, one day at a time, okay, I said, so maybe one day at a time is something I got to do. Because these guys did it. And in the meeting, I liked what they had. Some guy said, I'm 5 years sober. Some guy says, I'm 10 years sober. Some guy says, I'm 12 years sober. And I said, man, if you can live without a drink for 10 years, I want to too. I want that. I want what you got. So I didn't take a drink. I went to the next meeting. And I started going to 4 meetings a week in a town which was 3 hours driving distance from my town. That's 3 hours one way. So it's 6 hours by the time I got back. And I kept on doing these meetings. And I was finding something which I never had before. I was finding my higher power. I was finding the God of my understanding. And, you know, many years later I was wondering, because then I knew people 12-step each other, people go in 12-step and people do this and that, and I said, well, who was 12-stepping me? Yeah, someone was. The God of my understanding, my higher power, was 12-stepping me. All the way, God works his miracles in mysterious ways, and I have experienced it. Where is California? Where is India? Where is sending an email? Where is getting a reply? Greg Mutt replied that email, by the way. I don't know if you know Greg. He was the general manager of the GSO then, Greg Mutt. I met him when he came to India. It was a great meeting because I told Greg, hey, you replied my email, and that got me sober. So that was my journey in India, then eventually we started a group in our city. We started one group. Now we have 5 groups, 5 meetings a week. And Alcoholics Anonymous in India came in 1957. Alcoholics Anonymous started in India, so it's been there for the last 58 years. And then I got involved with service, and I served as a trustee on the board of India. And that was a great experience, going to cities where there was no AA. And one of the problems in India is we have 16 official languages. So if I go to another part of India, I wouldn't know what they are saying. I need an interpreter. But the GSO in India has done a great job. And they have translated into a lot of languages the literature of AA, including the Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book. And yes, I've been to cities where I have given an ad in the paper saying that, do you have a drinking problem? For a free solution, please contact this number. And yes, people have replied, people have called. That's how we got meetings going in those towns. And what a great feeling that is. Even though one alcoholic walks in the room, one town, just one guy came. That guy is still sober today. So this was the wonderful journey I had of Alcoholics Anonymous in India, a wonderful spiritual journey. Later on, I found a wonderful sponsor. The sponsor lived in Mumbai, which was 1 hour by flight. And I used to go every week and meet my sponsor. And my sponsor would ask me a lot of questions, and I'd answer. And then he says that, have you done the steps? So I said, well, I kind of read the steps. So he says, no, have you done the steps? So I go, I guess, no, I know, what are you trying to tell me? So he goes, well, you have to do the steps. You have to live the steps. You have to act the steps. Would you like to do that? And I go, yes, I very much would. And he says, remember, you have to do everything I say. And if you refuse to do what I say, then I'm no longer your sponsor. So I say, okay. So he took me through the 12 steps, took a year, 1 year. Step 4 and 5 took 2 months or 3 months. He made me write down all my resentments. Number 1 on the resentment list was my father. Number 2 was my wife. Number 3, number 4, all the people who were close to me, all the people who loved me, all the people who cared for me. And I didn't care at all for them. I didn't care what they thought about my drinking. As long as I was drinking, I was fine. And so did all the steps. And now I have a rule. Every month, I concentrate on 1 step. I always believe God made 12 steps and 12 months. So 1 step every month. 6 months, 6 step. 7 months, 7 step. It really helps me. It really helps me because I have to work on that step to get it, to do it again, to remind me of that step again, to look at my resentment list, to add new resentments. Am I having resentments against someone today after being in AA for 12 years? Then I better write it down and I better do something about it and I better talk to my sponsor. This is what AA has taught me. And my recovery was entirely in India. I recovered in Alcoholics with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous, but more so Alcoholics Anonymous, which was in India at that time. Because if there was no meeting, I wouldn't be here. I don't know what I would have done, but I wouldn't be here. If there was no Big Book, I wouldn't be here. If there was no Al-Anon, I wouldn't be here. So is this mysterious spiritual journey, dear friends, I wanted to share with you that I probably am one of the few guys who was 12-step by the big man himself. Thanks a lot.